You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, January 31st, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means. Casual Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And then I will be getting a movie recommendation from the oh-so-casual Isabel Gillies. Also, of course, your phone calls, your IMs. Chris Christie, the hits keep on coming. Oh, I can't wait. Until
goodbye. Goodbye, Chris Christie. Goodbye. Yes.
Also on the program today, immigration reform. I don't want to get into a Lucy football situation, but it's looking pretty good. And I know Mitt is now a movie star because of his documentary film. But appears he is the number one frontrunner for the 2016 New Hampshire primary. Unbelievable. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Just a reminder, you can support this program by becoming a member today at majority.fm. We need your support, folks. We need your support to produce the daily show. And then as a bonus, we give you an extra 50 minutes. Although, if my numbers are correct, we did basically an extra two shows this week. Yesterday, we did an extra hour on top of the extra 50 minutes. We did an extra hour and 50 minutes, I think, with Janine. We didn't end the show until like 2:30 in the morning. We did like 14 hours after. Same thing on Wednesday. So
basically, you're just spending the day with us.
Right. And then, you know, theoretically, Michael is writing up an explanation of what happens in the better half of the program. So you could theoretically skip around. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know why you're mumbling into a microphone that doesn't work. It's not turned on.
Impressive.
But
no, it's odd.
No, I'm just saying. I
don't even.
Right.
Usually I get your weird passive aggressiveness, like somewhere the realm it's coming from. I don't even get.
No, I just
solar
you know
this.
People email me.
You know you've written enough when your answer to that question is you don't think I write.
That's right. We'll see. All right, folks. We're going to talk a little bit about Chris Christie with Schechter. And I was thinking about having a reporter on, but as I basically said to Hayes last night on All In, I think we're well past the what's going to happen to Chris Christie in 2016 conversation. Although it's fun to talk about it because he's now dropped down to third or fourth in a list of like, you know, Sleepy and Snoozy and all the other seven dwarfs or eight dwarfs or 14 dwarfs. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, breaking news. It is Casual Friday. And you know what that means. It's Cliff Schechter Day. And you know what that means. It's Cliff Schechter theme song moment.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Cliffy, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I am doing all right. You know, same old, same old. Let's jump in. We don't have any. There's not. You know, this has not been a one of those weeks that has been dominated by the news, which is sort of shocking in a way, because the State of the Union happened just 3 days ago. But it already feels like you know.
Years ago, man.
It does. And you know, I spoke, you know, at some length with Ryan Grimm about the State of the Union, so I don't want to dwell on it too much. But if there was, I mean, even when we were before you came on, we were talking about what we would talk about, and it didn't even come up. I had forgotten that the State of the Union address had happened because it was a lot of us are small bore stuff. It didn't seem like the president was attempting to sort of draw any bright lines between the Republicans and the Democrats headed into the 2014 election. And this is probably going to be the last chance he's going to have that type of audience, you know,
yeah.
You know, assuming nothing horrible happens in the near future. And, you know,
dangerous to make an assumption these days.
Well, indeed. And
they're screwing things up just badly enough that anything can happen. But yes, your point is basically right on.
And I would add to that, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because, you know, we're still a long way off from the elections, but it's interesting to just to get a sense of where the two parties are trying to go with this. Henry Waxman, who has been in Congress for, I think my lifetime. I mean, maybe that may be an exaggeration because I'm pretty old these days. But Henry Waxman has announced that he will retire, which, you know, has implications, you know, just insofar as it's Henry Waxman. He's been on balance a very strong a congressman and progressive on most issues. But it also indicates that he doesn't think that the Democrats are going to take back the House in any way, shape, or form, and that it's, you know, he's not going to, there's no reason for him to stick around now. Now, granted, it's been 40 years, but
right.
If he thought that he was going to get back to be chair.
Talk about 40 years in the desert, huh?
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, so just what do you make of this? I mean, do you think, because, you know, when you get that sense that the Democrats don't think they're going to pick up the House, they're not sure about the Senate, maybe President Obama was just like, nah.
Yeah, you know,
there's no reason for me to shoot for the stars here.
I've got a lot of thoughts flying around that noggin of mine about this because obviously I didn't, you know, the State of the Union. All right, the president took on certainly Republicans and even recalcitrant members of his own party who want to push that stupid Iran sanctions bill because
that was the one. That was the biggest in my mind. The biggest headline that was not a headline out of that speech.
Right, and you know, there's always room for more land wars in Asia, as you know.
Right,
there
of
can
course.
Never really quite be enough to drain our resources. But you know, in a way, I'm so glad he did that. And those, I guess it was 15 or 16 of them before, a few since then. One who I like a lot on a lot of other things, but was bad on that. At least seemed to be was Kirsten Gillibrand, who seems to have backed off a little bit.
Yep.
As have a few others, including our friend Manchin from
Joe
West
Manchin.
Virginia. So you know that part was good, but it, you know it's in a way it kind of reminds me of the same thing we've been dealing with for a couple of years, which is the only time this guy can seem to get really truly angry is at people in his own party pushing him to do stuff, and in this case he happens to be right, so I'm glad. But yes, it was stronger than he's been in the past, and he did make the statement that, you know, I'm not going to here to stand around, and if you're not going to join me, I'm going to move forward, and certainly sent a message with the federal contractors getting the minimum wage raised to $10.10, and although it's not current contracts, it's future right. contracts and whatever, but still, there's a statement to be made there. But it does remind you kind of in a way of the fact that, you know, and this is going to be important for me. I've learned my lesson. I guess we're always learning lessons in life, and how progressive somebody was important to me, and other things were. And granted, I thought Obama was more progressive by a long shot. I've been let down on that. But the biggest thing where I've been let down on, and is his unwillingness to fight and call people out when it's necessary. You know, politics is about contrasts. It's about defining who you are, what you stand for, how that connects to people's everyday needs and the values they share with you, and how the other side doesn't. And he seems constitutionally, and I don't mean as in the U.S. Constitution, I mean as in his body, unable to stand up and say, you know, this is what's happened, and tell the story. He couldn't do it when he got first elected, which has bedeviled us forever, and in the time since. And again, you know, he makes it sound like everything that's happened, whether it's the economy or the rest, is like just some natural thing that's happened, you know, that we couldn't have helped. We just right. happen to be here with unemployment the way it is, and we just have, instead of saying that, you know, I'm going to have to do this, you know, instead of just sort of that broad statement he made, you know, either join me or I'm going to, why don't I not explain why it is that you have to resort now to executive orders? Who it is, you know, the fact that, you know, why do I have to turn on pundit shows to learn that this has been the most unproductive Congress of all time, that they've filibustered the most of all time? You know, why is he not, you know, why is he not explaining that to people and making it clear what his ideology is and what the other side's is? And that's the thing that still just drives me freaking nuts, you know, and that's what drives it, connects to the other thing you're talking about, whether it's House seats or Senate seats, because this is what these people who are being hit for Obamacare, this is what they need. They need a president who stands up every time and reminds people, here's what I stand for. I don't think because you have a pre-existing condition, you should be left to die. I mean, obviously, we'd put that in slightly nicer language, but the other side wants to repeal my law. They apparently think that. I don't think if you're, you know, if you get out of college and you're 22 years old without a job, you should have no health insurance. And if you get sick, you will perhaps die from it. This is what the other side thinks. He just can't seem to draw those contrasts
right.
where they need to be drawn. He can't seem to get angry at the people that question his very Americanness, everything he does.
Well,
and I don't understand it.
I think that they think, they being the administration, think that the first black president cannot get that angry ever.
And I think you're right.
And
I think they think that.
Now, that may be the case. I mean, I don't know. But your point in terms of contrast, I mean, this is the thing that leads me to believe that, you know, the administration, I mean, you know, Ryan Grimm again said that, you know, the administration is very focused on trying to retain the Senate at the very least. And I would imagine that becomes increasingly important when you think about, you know, to the extent that President Obama is going to add anything else to his legacy. If it's not
we've got 9 months to put people on huge, you know, if they lose the Senate, on the huge number of vacancies in the courts. For
and potentially the Supreme Court.
Right. I mean, and they're not going to let we what's clear now with their nullification strategy is where we were even 3 or 4 years ago. We're not there now, which is that where people like your Orrin Hatches, you know, your old institutionalists who'd been around for a while felt compelled to vote for somebody if they were qualified, even if they didn't agree with them.
No.
They no longer feel that.
Right.
They will basically, he could put up literally the most qualified judge in the history of the world. It could be a moderate. It could even be somebody almost as conservative as Kennedy, and they'd reject him because it was from him.
If the Republicans get in the majority in the Senate, they're going to go on a rampage. I mean, it's going to be like it's literally going to be like one of those like dark ages
and they'll investigate
attack
him and
on a
be
village
talk.
Type of thing, where
right. And let me say quickly, because I just want to finish what I was saying before, because I think I've heard other people bring that up, what you brought up, and I think it's legitimate. It's the Jackie Robinson comparison.
Yes.
When people spiked him and yelled all sorts of unbelievable things at him that he had to ignore it. I get it that he can't do what a Bill Clinton could do or someone else who could scream at the other side. I get it. He's
I don't know that he can or cannot do it, but I think that they believe that he can't.
But right. Well, okay. But even if he can't, the thing that he has going for him is he doesn't seem to ever lose his temper. He's very much keeps in control. And I think a controlled critique of the
yes,
other side,
I agree.
Without yelling, without losing your shit, essentially, would still, I don't think they'd be able to pull it off as, oh, he's the angry black man and all that. I really don't. That, I mean, you know, we've seen it on the Republican side where there are people who, you know, always it's the ones who scare me more are the ones who are more likable and just as crazy. We've discussed that before, you know, who don't lose it and start yelling. And I think he could have been very effective if from the beginning, but even a night like last or the other night, if he just put forward those statistics about how much these people block legislation, the unprecedented number of openings in the courts, you know, he told that story and did it in a perfectly nice way and said, this is unacceptable. This doesn't represent American values. This doesn't represent the best in our democracy. We will not let the Republican Party and its members in Congress do this, you know, and you can say it without the anger, without the screaming, but make it clear to people it's not Congress's fault or Washington's fault or the Beltway's fault or whatever. It is the Republicans in Congress'
right.
fault, all right? It's very clear who's – and that is how it has to be set up, you know? And that that's my biggest problem is that he was as strong as I've seen him in terms of the strength of his language and calling out the other side the other night. And the problem is that still wasn't nearly good enough. And I just think he can't do it. He literally – he doesn't have – I think you're saying it's a calculation. I've come to the point where I just don't think he has the strength of personality to do it, which shocks me. And, you know, I can't imagine it because obviously that's not me. Imagine, you know, one thing – it's one thing to be non-confrontational, not want to walk down the street and pick fights with people. It's another thing when people are attacking your very being and are trying to undermine your presidency to not have the will to call them out for it. And I just don't understand it. I don't get it.
Well, all right. Well, you know, that's the eternal sort of frustration. But, you know, there are good things happening in the Senate. Like you mentioned that the Iran sanctions bill seems to basically be going nowhere. Manchin, who was a co-sponsor.
He deserves a lot of credit for. So
when I
criticize him, I feel I have to be very clear when he does good things. And so far on the Iran bill, as well as just everything around that, I think that maybe one just about the best thing he's done during his presidency.
Also coming out of the Senate, I just want to mention, we had talked about it yesterday in the better half of the program, but Harry Reid came out against fast-tracking the TPP, or presumably that EU partnership as well, which is very encouraging to me. I mean, it's not going anywhere, at least in the near term. It's not going anywhere in this term. And when Harry Reid comes out and says no fast track, that also gums up the works for the actual negotiations themselves. So anything that prevents the TPP from happening, I think, is a good thing at this point.
And that's huge.
I mean, if we're
going to have the leader of the Senate, you know, whipping for this thing and trying to push it through, you already know that the black helicopter crowd on the right, the Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee faction, is going to oppose this thing.
Well,
so, you know, you get, and you already know that you can get some progressives, your Elizabeth Warrens and Tammy Baldwins, to oppose it. So if you get Harry Reid in there,
Harry Reid can just not bring it up. I mean,
well,
frankly,
that's
the thing.
Of course.
That's the beauty of Harry Reid saying this. It's basically, I'm against fast track. I think everybody would be well advised just not to push this right now. Now, I don't know how much the right
goes
now.
To him. Does he put it on the floor and just say, you know, okay, everybody, you know, figure it out for yourself? Or does he just refuse to actually put it on the floor? That to me seems to be a big question. But,
right.
You know, I guess we'll see.
I guess we will see. But so
but
that's,
it's good news. It's another example of, like, you know, we need to be, because of the lack of willingness, people, you know, someone, a listener of Vermont, somebody wrote a really good thing the other day about reminding people about where we were in 2004. when Democrats were scared, you know, out of their minds to challenge Republicans on Iraq, you know, and other things. And it was a lot of pressure from the left that led to what happened in 2006 and 2008. You know, the left played a strong role in that. And some of the people, very important progressive legislators that got elected then, you know, a few steps forward, many steps back is the way it goes. And I think we're in a similar situation, yeah. Which is apparently the strength isn't coming from the president or others to define who the other side is, you know, how they're antithetical to pretty much everything this country stands for. And so, you know, it's up to progressive senators to show up in districts that we need to hold on to and make that case. You know, it's up to the Elizabeth Warrens and Tammy Baldwins again and Sherrod Browns and, you know, Ron Wydens and others to travel around and make that case. And hopefully, you know, not to mention activists and progressives in the media and others. And hopefully, you know, they will.
Let's also talk about there was a vote yesterday morning in the Senate Judiciary Committee to pass a bill that would reform the federal government's drug sentencing laws. Those were, you know, passed during the Reagan era of just say no and lock up as many people, particularly minorities, as you can. This bill, it's called the Smarter Sentencing Act. It was introduced by Durbin and Mike Lee.
Another one where the black helicopter crowd is,
yes,
joining us.
Well, this is where the sort of the libertarian sort of so-called wing of the Republican Party is helpful. It would basically reform the mandatory minimum statuses, which handcuff not just people, but also judges.
It takes away the whole purpose of actually having a judge.
Yes.
Right? I mean, those laws were always ridiculous for that reason, and I think it gives judges more discretion, and it actually allows people that were convicted under these old sort of disparities between crack and cocaine to get back in front of judges. And,
yep,
you know, I think there's a motivation here. I mean, if you look left and right and center and all around you, Rand Paul is doing everything he can to reach out to African Americans, which I find interesting,
right?
Considering stuff he's been for in the past and some of the people he hangs around with and his dad hangs around with. But okay, you know, I don't care what his reasons are. It's the right thing. And when you combine that with that sentencing reform, we've had it here in Ohio that was led actually by our Governor Kasich, who's bad on most things. When you start seeing Republicans do that and you start seeing Rick Perry call for decriminalizing pot and you start seeing the sort of movements towards, you know, obviously in a few states, pot being legalized and whatever. I mean, it seems like it feels like we're moving as fast on this now as we are in gay marriage.
Yep.
We're really past the tipping point on the ridiculous war on drugs, which I didn't think I'd see perhaps during my lifetime. So I got to consider that very, very good news.
And this is good stuff to push in an election year when you've got people like you know, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul trying to become that guy in the Republican Party, you know, leading up to 2016. This is good stuff to be pushing at this point because, you know, they're all trying to. You know, hopefully we'll get some progress on that. Let's talk about immigration, too, because this is interesting. 2 months ago, if you had said we're going to be very close to maybe passing immigration reform come February of 2014, I would have said absolutely not possible.
Right.
But I think the Republicans must be very concerned that there is going to be that essentially the pro-immigration vote, the Latino vote, the activist vote could be energized in the off-year election because of the GOP obstruction on immigration. I mean, that's the only thing I can imagine is driving them at this point. And it looks like, I mean, things are relatively close. I mean, at least in terms of where people are talking about, there's a Senate plan that the White House and Nancy Pelosi support. It would include all the sort of, you know, visa program stuff and the increased border security, workplace hiring verification, all of those sort of, you know, we've got to make the border tighter and all of that stuff, which is, you know, fine. And maybe hopefully, you know, maybe. But at the end of the day, the real key to all of this is getting people out from essentially the black market, the black market in labor, essentially. And the White House and Democrats in general want a sort of a guarantee that immigrants will be able to get citizenship or at least a permanent legal status within 10 years and then a citizenship to follow within a couple years afterwards, you know, as long as they're not criminals or I don't know what else. But and right. It seems the House, I mean, I should say the Republicans, essentially, they don't want to have any type of guarantee path to citizenship. They want to have a probationary period that is benchmarked to sort of these vague, almost impossible to measure benchmarks. Immigrants can't have any family members on public assistance or something like that. That's all a little bit vague, but there seems to be a sort of a general notion that they will not keep those people from getting citizenship eventually. And so we may see some type of bill, because it's, I think that the Democrats would, as long as there is an ultimate path to citizenship, they would sign off on something like this, and it would presumably take people out of the shadows. So we may see an immigration bill.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what it comes down to, because there are a number of House members who've said that they wouldn't even consider the Senate plan, they wouldn't negotiate on it. So I guess it depends, you know, can they find a place to meet on all of this? You know, and obviously, you know, for 11 million people, not having the fear of deportation is a huge motivator, as one would expect it would be. At the same time, to be given no legal status, I mean, essentially what they're doing there is what people on the right, you'd expect them want to do. Join the labor pool. Let's get some cheap labor. You know, you don't have to worry about being tossed out of the country, but you're never going to be a citizen, or it's going to be very hard if you know. And then, to me, the whole idiotic, you know, let's militarize the borders, as if there are still large numbers of people sneaking across the border.
Right.
You know.
Well, the other problem is that probationary period is a little murky, because if you benchmark it to these sort of weird metrics that an immigrant has no control over, it really cuts down on their incentive to say, hey, here I am. Good luck with cutting down the whatever it is, you know, building all these walls by 2017. And if you don't, you've got my name, and then you come and deport me and my children. I mean, so that's what's
a little
bit.
I would think a lot of people who are immigrants would not go for this.
Yes, I would also think, but it depends on where this ultimately lands, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, just how afraid the Republicans are of this, of the immigration lobby. I mean, we haven't seen the big sort of marches that we saw back in, I think it was 2005, but it is
interesting. Clearly, look, there's a number of Republicans, particularly I think in California, in Florida, who are in seats that have large Hispanic populations, in Texas, for that matter, too, that if they were to come out and vote, particularly if in a presidential year, maybe not this time around, but in 2 years, a lot of these guys, the Hispanic share of their population is only growing and pretty rapidly. You know, there's a good dozen, 15 or so of these guys are going to, you know, and gals that are going to be in serious trouble. And so I think that some of it is that, and I'm sure some of those are a few of these guys and, you know, senators in states like Arizona and Nevada and places like that are seeing the ground completely shift underneath them from where their, you know, where their states used to be. And so obviously, clearly, there's a motivator there, you know, for them to be able to at least try and win over some of these voters. And also, you know, it's about looking like you're tolerant, which is
well. It was funny. Did you see that
there was Republican Party to do?
There was a piece in BuzzFeed by John Stanton, I think it was, who had a couple of quotes from an unnamed Republican lawmaker who said, look, you know, I hate to admit it because these are my people, but it's because they're racist they don't want immigration reform. And then there was like another a Republican spokeswoman who said, we like, you know, we like to think that it's not about racism. And Lindsey Graham had an interesting way
like to think that.
Lindsey Graham had an interesting way of phrasing it, where he said, well, you know, people have been demagoguing have been talking about demagoguery about immigration for a long time, and that hasn't changed. And I guess demagoguery is the new way euphemism in the Republican Party for when we do it, we're actually what we mean is racism. And
well, in Lindsey Graham's defense, he needs some more Hispanics to drop out of airplanes as human bombs into Syria.
Right.
So that's clearly why he's doing it. These guys are all, look, you know, there's some who obviously actually believe in this and they're scared of, you know, what the repercussions, you know.
Apparently, this is one of the big things that Republicans will get primaried on in these House races. So we'll see how
I'm still. Yep. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, we'll see how serious that threat is.
Yeah, I still, again, you know, I think we're in a much better place than where we were, as you said, 2 months ago. But I still by no means am confident that anything's going to happen. I just think there's still too many lunatics. I think if they don't just have to spend all their time defending Senate seats, that's the Democrats, and they could pick up a half dozen House seats or so in this election and maybe bring things a little bit closer. It's possible, but I still think you've got a lot of you know, there's still a lot of excess crazy left in the Republican Party. They have no means used up their crazy.
All right, let's talk about in terms of excess. Let's talk about Chris Christie.
Excess what, you say?
Well, just excessive corruption, as far as I can tell. This week, we had a couple of news stories that broke. And like I say, there's two different.
Aren't there every week? It's pretty excellent.
Yes, it is actually quite fun. There are two tracks here. There is the political track. Like, what does all of this do to Chris Christie? And what is happening politically to Chris Christie? And then there's the how close are we to seeing him frog marched track? Let's take the first track. I mean, the second track, rather, the frog march track. There was a story that came out this week that Chris Christie's brother, Todd Christie, and two of Todd Christie's partners have bought and sold a handful of properties within walking distance of a PATH station in Harrison, New Jersey. The PATH train is like a light commuter rail between New Jersey and New York. That is almost like a subway, I mean, in some respects, but it goes further out.
Right.
And obviously, if the PATH train has a good station, that property values goes up because it gets people into New York. It becomes a commuting suburb for New York. And, you know, Chris Christie's brother seems to be a real estate genius. Because he and his partners, and one of his partners is the owner of Ferrara Construction, a large firm that has done tens of millions of dollars of work for state agencies since Chris Christie took office.
It's like he knows the most talented people in the
world.
It's
unbelievable. These guys are so good at business. And Chris Christie's brother and his partners, one of whom is just somehow stepped up to the plate and gotten like $10, $12, $15 million worth of business from the state. They bought a bunch of properties in Harrison, and then lo and behold, within 12 months, the Port Authority, you'll recall the Port Authority, This is what was basically this massive slush fund, it appears to be, for the Christie administration and his cronies. The Port Authority decides.
The Port Authority is Chris Christie's son, essentially. It is the sun for him, where everything rises. And I mean, seriously, everything that comes out of that place is corrupt. It's pretty funny.
The Port Authority decides to spend $250 million in a renovation on the Harrison path station. Well, I should say,
no
to
way.
Be fair, $256 million. What a stroke of genius it was of Chris Christie's brother to buy that land, because it like tripled and quadrupled in value in the course of 12 months.
I mean, does this guy ever play the lotto? Because he's good.
Yeah, he's a good businessman. And what's also apparently, according to the New Jersey record, or the Bergen County record, I guess it is, the renovation came into focus this week when the record reported that the Port Authority Chairman David Sampson, this is Chris Christie's consigliere, who, as we know, has been subpoenaed by, at the very least, the legislative committee that is looking into this, but probably also the U.S., the Assistant USA in New Jersey, the Justice Department, that David Sampson also had private ties to the land around the Harrison Station. And as chairman of the Port Authority, he voted to approve the Harrison Station overhaul. Months That's after amazing. A client of his law firm proposed converting a nearby warehouse into luxury apartments. So in other words, it's like, let's get everybody we know to invest in this area around here, and then boom. What do you know? It's as if
it's amazing this guy got as far as he did.
It's transcendental meditation.
That is a story about our times and about the media. This guy is so freaking corrupt.
Ugh.
So corrupt. Not even normal Republican or even sometimes Democratic corrupt. But, you know, not $90,000 in the freezer corrupt. Right.
I have to say, New Jersey seems to be like
every political decision he does.
Yeah.
It seems somebody benefits. You know, there were stories about this when he was a U.S. attorney.
Yep.
He only got that position by the end of his fundraising.
Fundraising, right.
For Bush, yep. Not because he had a clue what he was doing. There were enough stories then about how he was the guy who most routinely overspent the amount of money they gave them to stay at luxury hotels and all sorts of crap. Nobody wanted to talk about this because he's cool and he, like, you know, he talks like one of us and he
right.
knows what he, you know, and, you know, he got to this position. And even the 4 years he was, I mean, look at all these stories. Look at them from Jersey City to Hoboken to, you know, and the New York Times story that came out, which said that literally, you know, obviously this guy didn't know what his staff was doing because he was only micromanaging like 100 different little sort of swing cities and areas. You know, they had marked down, they were calling mini Floridas and mini Ohios.
Yeah.
That was hugely important for him to win big so he could make the argument he could do that across the country. And he was doing that with, you know, Bridget Kelly and all these other people. But no, he didn't know what they were doing, obviously. You know, everything was about two things, enriching everybody around him and becoming president. Every
yeah.
decision he made. And anybody that crossed him on either of those things was to be threatened. Was to be kicked around. I mean, you know, Christie, Grimm, and Giuliani should start like a new mob family, I think.
Well, you know, speaking of Giuliani, I mean, I want to get to the political part in a second because
Giuliani helped throw him under the bus.
There's
too.
Also another story. Last night I was on Chris Hayes' program and had a chance to talk to this New Jersey assemblywoman who sits on the committee that was to provide oversight or at least respond to issues of the Sandy, the distribution of Sandy emergency relief funds. And she told me that the guy who was hired to be in charge of the distribution of these funds, basically they kept sending him letters to come to hearings that they were having around the state to answer questions of people who were getting the Sandy distribution funds. This is a guy who is hired specifically for that job. He just never showed. Just
Whoa.
Never showed. No response, nothing. On top of that, apparently they had another guy who was in charge of hiring the company. They hired a private company HDI is their short way of saying their name. I can't remember what the full name is. They were functioning as essentially the adjusters. This was the company that was privately contracted to go out, take a look at your property, determine what damage has been done, how much Sandy relief you get. They were fired 7 weeks ago. Subsequent to that, the person who did ostensibly the firing had testified in front of her committee, never mentioned that that company was no longer working for the state. Nobody knows why that company was fired. And here's the interesting thing. This is a $60 million contract. Now, let me ask you this, Cliff. You obviously work in the PR world. If you're a company, you have gotten fired from your $60 million contract. If you don't get all your money, or even, I mean, let's say you don't get all your money, right?
Yeah.
You have no incentive not to get out there. What would you do? What would the first thing you do if it was the case that you were fired? Would you not want to put out your own press release to say, you know, like, so that we can get on top of this story before we get maligned, because we need other business in the future, right? Because eventually it's going to come out. Nothing. They didn't announce it. They didn't tell the press. Nobody knows whether or not they got paid off for their whole contract. I mean, it's very weird for a company that gets fired in this way not to come out with a press release saying, we have parted ways because X, Y, and Z. Eventually, it's going to get back to the larger community that they get hired by, that like, oh, wait, maybe we shouldn't go with these guys. I mean, this is very strange. Nobody knows what's going on there. The whole process is completely shrouded in mystery. I think this is like, we are just on the tip of what we're going to see in terms of legal action. Because at one point, and Governor Christie, incidentally, vetoed a bill passed by the legislature in New Jersey that would have provided greater oversight for how the Sandy funds were being distributed. He just appointed to an ethics panel, the head and ethics panel, in to look at all of these questions, a woman from his old law firm that he had worked with for 15 years or something.
Right. It's always something like this. I mean, it's just...
They are circling the wagons, and, you know, I think... My understanding is that Kelly, the deputy chief of staff, has recently been divorced and has four children. And as
she thinks she is the one who turns state's evidence?
I think that she is either the one who turns. I think right now, David Wildstein's attorney and Kelly's attorney are basically wondering,
fighting it out,
which one of us is going to be the first one.
Yeah, somebody who covers, I don't know if you ever read, and if you don't, you should, Charlie Pierce's blog at Esquire.
Yes.
Who's just awesome and hysterical. He has, there's a writer there who writes about the Port Authority for Esquire, who's now been jumping in on his blog and writing about this stuff. And she was just pointing out that when you look at right now, the potential number of people at the Port Authority who he put there, who knew what was going on, who've been subpoenaed and everything, that it's just sort of counting down until his political death, because somebody's going to come forward. And again, we knew it. It's sort of like when finally that Fort Lee thing broke the dam, so to speak,
yep,
and broke through. You were just waiting for the tidal wave, because this has been the way this guy clearly has done business for his entire life,
right,
his entire adult life.
Right.
Like, they're going to find stuff, my guess is, if they care to, that he did 15 years ago. They're going to find all sorts of corrupt things he did, probably in convicting people as a U.S. attorney. I'm sure there will be cases overturned that he worked on. He has been a corrupt scumbag from day one.
This is sort of how the theory of revolution, and I'm not saying this is a revolution, but the theory of revolution, when a dictator has control over a country, is when there is actually some easing of his iron grip on what's going on there. Because once people get a slight taste of this, then sort of like the, it's like a crack in a dike. It just
right.
explodes. And that's what's happening. I mean, by the time this is over, we're going to be seeing, you know, pictures. We're going to be hearing, you know, details from a New Jersey state trooper about the rendezvous with the girlfriend. We're going to see the whole kit and caboodle is going to come out. So. That's,
I mean,
one
all
track.
This stuff's happening, you know, his friendly law firm, if you didn't say, it's mixed in there, you know, with his buddy Samson, who was at the Port Authority, was now just fired by the Rockefeller Group, you know. Who
yes,
the one
people
that,
are
who,
running from you, the hills.
You can tell me that somebody at the Rockefeller Group, if they get subpoenaed, isn't going to roll on. I mean, you know, there are people that are 3 degrees, 4 degrees removed from this thing that have to know what's going on, right? You know, there's just, you know, and as I said before, even Giuliani threw him under the bridge.
Well, that's the political. This is the political thing. This is what's really what I think is very telling. Giuliani, the best he had to say about Chris Christie was like, hey, he's a good guy. What did he say? 50-50 chance?
50-50 chance he didn't do it.
50? Yeah, okay. Now, this is a guy. Understand, Rudy Giuliani is a guy who gave his personal assurance to George W. Bush and vouched for potential Department of Homeland Security, Bernie Kerik, who I don't know how many months later it was in jail. Was in jail. And so that's what happens when Giuliani gives a full-throated endorsement. At 50-50, I mean, Chris Christie... He may be days away. He may be days away from a frog march. And then you get, I mean, it is done. He is so done. And I have to say, you know, I enjoy patting myself on the shoulder because I really don't get enough of it at home. But it was day three of this thing where I said, 2016, that's not the question here. The question is he governor in even 2015? I may even be right. Like moving this up to November of 2014.
I've been saying that for a while too. I'm, you know, I've been saying, and I will stick with that. He will not finish his term as governor.
Oh God!
The question only is whether he can make some sort of a deal to keep himself out of prison.
That's right.
But he will not. He's not finishing his term as governor.
Yeah, I wonder who he'd throw. I mean, what bigger fish does he have? I mean, I got a lot of stuff on Karl Rove. Yeah, we're sort of past that now. But wait a second.
The Genovese family.
Yeah, right.
I know. That's right. I mean, who the hell knows?
I'm going to enjoy it. I mean, I'm going to bathe. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to bathe in the tears of Joe Scarborough. I'm going to bathe in those tears.
You probably need many a bath after that. But
yes, exactly. Well, that's when I
get where you're going with that. It will be fun to watch. It's sort of like all of his heroes have fallen.
Well, you know, here's the thing, though, is that and what you're going to see is you're going to start to see a massive pile on, because the one problem that Chris Christie has is that he doesn't have the perception of an ideological purity that would trigger the brainstems of the conservative movement types. And so they can simply say this is about corruption, not about ideology. But, you know, the reality of the conservative movement is that that's what so much of this is about, that. But this is corruption that is like, you know, in my mind, this is sort of like more like, I mean, this is pretty broad scale, but this is sort of like the mold of Democratic corruption, right? This is like the old party boss type of thing.
Yep.
But this guy just, I think, has taken it to some pretty extreme heights. Now, on the receiving end of a lot of this corruption, I think you're going to find county bosses and stuff like that that are probably Democrats. But the bottom line is Chris Christie, from a political standpoint, toast. But in my mind, that doesn't mean that we cannot enjoy seeing him frog march when that happens. And
can't enjoy life,
right?
As far as I'm concerned.
So, Cliff, until... Yeah, maybe ultimately it'll be good for him to have some time to reflect and to pick up on some reading. And that's
sure.
Right. When he comes out of prison, he's going to be able to. I can see Bruce coming over and going like, "I decided to pick you up because I knew you'd be coming out of prison. You'd have no friends, and
I'm sure it'll be Michael Grimm that'll come pick him up.
No, I think it'll be... I think
they were going to keep you in, but I threw that guy off the fucking balcony.
Cliff, you missed it by 3 minutes.
This is an actual...
You're just going to get your own FCC violation.
This is like an American political party that has people like this in it.
I know. Well, that Grimm at Staten Island, I mean... You know, when he gets thrown out of office because of his federal investigation,
can I ask real
quick? He'll be replaced by another guy who comes in and goes, I would never be so uncouth as to threaten you to be thrown off a balcony. I have my handler say it to you.
Excuse me, this is Frank. He will throw you off the balcony. In fact, did you hear this? And I don't know if it's true, but I saw on Page 6 that the reporter that he threatened, who's like this nice young guy or whatever. But that guy's uncle or something is like a major figure in the Gambino crime family.
Oh, geez.
So maybe that's why Grimm apologized and got correct.
We could have an awesome sort of cue the montage with the opera in the background, end scene from The Godfather.
Yeah,
I want some people getting shot and like
You know Dick Wolf and the writers of The Good Wife and. Every single crime drama show right now is already trying to work this storyline into it. It's just too good. But
I'll just say this. My last piece of advice for Grimm, avoid Sparks Steakhouse.
All right, Cliff Schechter, everybody.
Cliffy, right. Talk as to you always, guys soon.
A
Thanks,
pleasure.
Man.
Thank you. All right, folks. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song this week?
We do not.
We don't? Oh, all right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be talking to the ever so casual and wonderful Isabel Gillies. We'll be right back. We will be right back. See you soon. All right, folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is Casual Friday, folks. And it is always a pleasure to have one of our regular movie recommenders, the lovely and talented best-selling author, the famous actress, Isabel Gillies, and, of course, which we... And of course, the Isabel Gillies theme song.
Hit it, Sam.
Is casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know. Listen to the picks from Isabel. IsabelGillies.com.
I gotta say,
oh.
Whenever I hear that, I think, you know, Jimmy Reefer Cake, his intro songs are masterful. And of course, well deserved by the guests who Reefer Cake decides to put finger to guitar and pen to paper. If that's what he does, I have no idea what his process is. Isabel, how are you?
I'm good.
This is the first time we've spoken in 2014.
In 2014, the last time was in the deep midwinter.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's
in the bleak midwinter.
It's still pretty bleak and still pretty wintry.
Yeah, but I see the other side.
You see the other side? What does that mean?
Yeah, I just can. Spring is on the other side now. Where before we were on the uphill, now we're on the downhill.
Yeah, I get that feeling. I get that feeling really actually in February. That's when I start to feel like back in the days where I had seasonal affective disorder. Which I think, I'm not sure exactly what that was a function of, but it was always, if I could make it to February, then I would be fine. And but yeah. Now I'm just like, you know, broadly morose all the time. I think that's because I have kids. And so I don't have those big mood swings.
Well, yeah, February's my birthday month, so, and it's Valentine's Day. So.
Wait, your birthday's in February?
See,
I didn't know that.
The ninth. I'm going to be 44.
Holy cow! I had no idea.
Yeah, it's true.
Did you know Nikki's birthday is February 14th?
Oh gosh, that's so good! Really, on Valentine's Day?
Oh, it's not good. It adds.
Wait, it's good or bad?
It's bad.
Wouldn't it make things easier because you only have to do that sort of thing once?
No, it just creates just impossible to meet expectations. Although the good part about it is that, I mean, the unfortunate part about it is that, you know, I was never someone who took Valentine's very seriously. I don't know if it was because as a kid, I was always like the one kid in, you know, class who did not get as many Valentine cards or
aww,
whatever it was. But I don't think that's what it was. But I didn't take it seriously. And I think Nikki never realized that because it was mixed in with her birthday. You know what I mean?
You know what? I think we talked about this last year, and that feels like 2 seconds ago.
Wow.
I remember you had to get a present, and it had to be amazing,
yeah,
and we went through what the present was. And
oh, yeah. I don't even remember what it was.
But it was like, felt like it was a month ago. What's happening?
Well, time is moving faster. I mean, I think I have to do things like, you know, have like some type of large float that you would see in a parade, and I have to light it on fire and have it be in the shape of a heart, and it has to stroll down, go down the street or something like that. Time's moving quicker, Isabel. Your kids are getting older.
I know.
Do you know Saul is starting kindergarten in the fall?
But can he walk?
Well, almost. I mean, he can take like 3 steps and then just basically dives into the carpet face first.
No.
Yeah.
Aw. He's so cute. Yeah, they're getting bigger, and I'm pleased to say, tremendously pleased to say, like beyond, you know how there's some parents that are like, if my kid becomes a doctor or a pitcher for the Yankees or if you have a dream for their kid,
yeah,
and they're like, I'll die happy.
Right.
I've never had that. I've just always been like, I don't know, what are you going to do, you know? So our youngest has taken up the bagpipes.
What?
Yes.
Is he good at it?
Well, he's just started, but I actually think he sort of has a little inclination for it. And I can't even tell you the joy it brings me. It's like, so I now do have that feeling. Like if it sticks and he's into it and he plays for his life, I will die happy. It's like, I can't believe it. I watch him do it and I can't believe it.
What are you going to do when he says in like a month and a half, like, eh?
I prefer
Nintendo.
No. You know why? There's a couple reasons why he's not going to do that. A, I won't let him do that because he's still little and he doesn't have control of his life.
Whoa.
Okay. B, no, it's true. Come on.
Okay.
It's true. I'm in charge. You're in charge when the kid is 9.
Tell me about it. Not really. Go ahead.
This is the one. This is the kid who's so into Bob's Burgers.
Oh,
this
yeah,
is
okay.
The kid whose favorite show in the world is Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
And second of all, because it's his heritage. And you can feel, and I'm
Bob's
not kidding.
Bob's Burgers
laugh,
is his
but,
heritage? I'm confused
no.
now.
Oh, the bagpipes. You can feel, or sit there and listen to it, and you can feel the Highlands and stuff. You can. It's our people.
Ah. All right. Well, whatever you say.
Sam, don't rag
yeah,
on
well,
the
anyway.
Riches this kid will make from his bagpipe
playing. I'll tell you something. Bagpipes are one of my favorite things. I mean, that's why I like to go to all the parades. If the bagpipes come by, I get very excited. Very
yeah,
excited.
I know, and cry and everything. I know.
He's going to go. Is he going to do any of the parade stuff? I mean, I would imagine if you do
he,
bagpipes, that's it,
he will.
Basically it, right? I mean, that's
eventually,
the only time
gets...
you get a chance to play is when there's a parade. When else
or
do you
a funeral.
Play? Oh, well, that's good.
Or, like, ceremonial stuff.
Yeah, like weddings. He could do weddings.
No, oh, God, yeah. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. That's great. Mile is the same way now with Rainbow Loom.
With what?
Rainbow Loom.
And then it got banned.
Well, it got banned at her school, but it doesn't matter. She spends all day doing it, and...
Still?
Oh, yeah. What do you mean, still?
It was a trend. It's over.
Ooh, nice to, like...
I got news for you. You know what's over?
Yeah.
Bagpipes.
Yeah, poo-poo.
Bagpipes got over somewhere around, I think, the 1500s, frankly.
Totally
wait,
poo-pooing
how
on Sam's
many bracelets
kids,
could she make?
Oh,
how many
I'm wearing four of them right now because
much more
my,
earning potential my, in what she's my, doing than bagpipes. Let's be clear.
My double starburst needs a repair, so that's back. That would be five. She's made.
Your double
she doesn't
what?
Just make. She doesn't make my double starburst. Look, she doesn't just make bracelets. She made bookmarks. She's making pen holders. She's making iPhone holders. She's making. She constructed a rideable tricycle.
Well, a rideable
not,
what?
No, that's not true. I exaggerated
tricycle?
I exaggerated on that.
Well, how about this? Why doesn't she do a sale?
Well, you know what? I tried to convince her to do that, but she's a little bit too like, no, these are mine. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do with five, like literally 500 Rainbow Loom bracelet. She's like, this is my work. It's not for sale. And then I just made her
well,
give
how about
it to
this?
President.
She can sell it and then get more Band-Aids
yeah,
there.
That's what I'm working on right now.
Band.
She may. I've tried to get her to do like a Majority Report branded, but she's having trouble with an M and an R, but she's working on it.
What about if she did, if she, I bet some friends of hers do it.
Not as good as she does.
Oh, she's really good at it?
Oh, yeah.
So okay, so she should do a sale for charity or something, you know, give it to a school that's in trouble.
Yeah, I think ultimately she's going to work her way there, but she's a perfectionist. With
right now
work.
She's possessive.
Now let's talk about the last movie, Isabel. Wait, what's the update on your book? When's that book coming out?
The fall. I'll be on your show like every minute when that book comes out.
Well, of course, I'm going to push the heck out of that. Are you kidding?
Thank you.
Now, the last movie you recommended, if I remember correctly, was 20 Feet from Stardom. Is that right?
20 Feet from what?
Oh, that was Judy Gold. Sorry.
No, not.
What did
I
you recommend?
Didn't recommend that.
What did you recommend?
Judy Gold also recommends movies?
Well, no, she, you know, I bring on comedians as like one-offs. But they're nobody else's regular
she's
like
really
you.
Funny. Don't have to replace me.
No, she's not going to replace you. No way. Don't
Judy
worry
Gold's me. Funny.
She is funny.
And wait, I saw that Janine Garofalo was on yesterday.
That's right. No, I mean, it's not... We don't make this an exclusively male show. We do our best, but occasionally women occasionally come on.
Well, I'm going to watch that because I love Janine Garofalo.
Well, you'll notice that Janine was also wearing a Rainbow Loom bracelet from Myla that Janine was
wearing. Well, now you just make me feel bad because I don't have one.
Well, you know what? Janine had already told Myla about, well, first of all, Janine wears a lot of, you know, like she does her own beading. Like beading bracelets. And
oh, yeah. She seems crafty.
Myla had done a video with her. We had done a video for her DVD years ago now. And so they're sort of a little bit buddies. And Janine had told Myla her colors years ago. Somehow Myla remembered exactly what her colors were. It was sort of
bizarre. And just whipped her up one.
Yeah, it was sort of bizarre. But so wait. So
Thomas
what,
can rainbow loom too, but he just can do one kind of bracelet.
Seriously? Oh my God, that's not rainbow looming then. That's just.
Well, he doesn't even do it with the loom. He just does it with his fingers.
What is that? A single? He's just doing a single.
What?
A single.
I don't know. Probably it's cool. Peter wears it. It's purple.
Single seems a little bit dicey. I mean. When he's doing fishtails or when he's doing a double starburst, give me a call and then we can talk. All right. Or a triple single. But not. Don't talk to me about a single. That's not rainbow loom. That's just rainbow.
All right. Well, he sold all the braces with his friend Lucas and they made money.
Really?
So put that in your pipe.
How much was he selling a bracelet for?
Put that in your loom and weave it.
How much was he selling a bracelet for?
I don't know. But he made $14.
Wow. All right. Well, now, what was the last movie that you recommended? The Gauntlet?
She threw down the Gauntlet. With
that. No, it wasn't. The last one I did was...
The Gauntlet was good.
It was
Clint Eastwood.
No, the last one I did was a skateboarding movie.
Didn't see it. I didn't get a chance to.
When I was on with Matthew Film Guy...
Don't remember that guy.
We did what was the best movie of the year.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. Well,
so I didn't recommend one.
Okay. Now, what did you think of American Hustle?
Well, you know, I love David O. Russell. So I really liked it. And then, I mean, I liked it. I didn't like it as much as his first one.
I don't understand. What do you mean his first one?
His first movie, or not his first movie, the first one in this trilogy. We talked about American Hustle, I think.
Wait, American Hustle is a trilogy?
Well... The first one, the one in Boston, the Fighter, which I recommended on this show, is one of my favorite movies ever. Then the second one is the Eagles movie, the playback movie. And then this one, he sees them as a trilogy.
What is the playback movie?
You know, the one with Jennifer, what's her name, Silver Linings playbook.
Yeah,
it's a trilogy.
I didn't realize that. I didn't know.
Yeah, I read that. I read that somewhere.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. all right, so Isabel, what do you got for
me? Amy Adams is playing me in the movie version of my book.
Wait, what? There's a movie version of your book?
No, it hasn't been made yet.
You never told me that.
Yeah, I'm
shocked.
Your book got optioned as a movie?
Yeah.
When?
And Amy Adams has signed on to do it.
Wait a second. You didn't tell me any of this. When did this happen?
A long time ago. It's taking a while.
We've been playing it so close to the vest. Who's going to direct it?
I don't know. We don't know yet. But here's the thing.
I'll toss my hat into the ring.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Here's the thing.
We don't even
talk about it or celebrate it until we're sitting in the seats with popcorn.
Nothing ever happens. I understand. Believe me.
Nothing ever happens. It's like a nightmare.
But so Amy Adams is attached.
And, you know.
Myla is a fan of hers now because of Night at the Museum 2, where she played Amelia Earhart. Wait, so you have no director attached, just an actress attached. You have a script?
Right. Yeah.
There's a script.
Working. Everything is like...
Who's writing the script?
Everything is working on it. Huh?
Who's writing the script?
I can't talk about it.
All right. Well, I just want you to know. Available to direct, available for Punch Up.
I can't even talk about it.
Well, you don't have to talk about it. I'm just telling you right now. Available to direct, available for Punch Up.
Oh, good. Oh, to Punch It Up. Good, good, good. Well, that's good to know, actually.
You're going
to
need it. Because I don't know who that writer is, but I'm not encouraged right now.
But you like the book, so you can do it, right?
Oh, I love the book. I thought it was great.
Oh, well, thanks. Wait, can I tell you that I've got a really good movie this week?
I didn't really read all of the book yet.
Oh, Sam, what?
I've read.
How can you admit that on
as you're trying to get the director's chair for it.
I'm recommending people read the book. Is it on Audible? Did you do the voiceover for it?
It's on audiobook.
Did you do the voiceover for it?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's what
it was hard, too. I'll tell you that.
I've done one.
That was really funny.
I did one for FUBAR.
What? Oh, you did?
Yeah. Did you read FUBAR?
No.
Ah. All right.
Yeah.
Did you even pick
no,
it up?
I went in there to do it.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, Isabel, do you want water, tea, lemon, Ricolas, anything? And I said, no, I got this. Don't worry about it.
6 hours
in
later.
In an hour, I was like, excuse me. I was like, water at 76 degrees with lemon and lots of honey, but I want the honey in packets so I can also suck on them. I want 3 packs of Ricola. I was like the most biggest diva.
I can't even believe what Peter must go through at your household.
What Peter deals with?
Yeah.
This is just when I was doing 4 days of an audiobook.
Well, I'm just saying.
Oh, but it's good. He gets good. I just went and spent like 2 hours at the supermarket getting Super Bowl food.
Wow.
That I'm gonna roast a pork butt and make it into shredded deliciousness for talk nachos. And I got all sorts of IPA beers and wings, and forget about it.
Oh,
I'm the best wife in the world. Are you kidding me?
That's pretty nice. All just for Peter, or are you having people
over?
Yeah,
we got some people over. You know,
that's all right. I'm busy. Neighbors. I'm busy.
No, it's not like a huge party. It's just upstairs
neighbors. No, I mean, it doesn't sound like a huge party. You got a whole pork butt. I mean, I'm sure that it's probably just for one or two people. It's all right. Look, Isabel.
I have 3 children.
That's fine. I'm going to be busy. I've got other commitments. I've got a lot of other commitments on Super Bowl Sunday. In fact,
you can come over.
No, it's all right. I'm not fishing for an invite. I'm just expressing resent that I did not get one, or I guess resentment.
I'm just trying to say that I'm a good wife.
No doubt about it. It's but you know, maybe you need to work on the friend thing. Okay, listen. Let's talk about the movie. That's all right. I don't need to celebrate. I don't need to go to a Super Bowl party to feel like I'm invited to a party. What do you got? What do you got for a movie?
Super Bowl with Maya.
What do you got? We got.
Okay. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
It came out a while ago, maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept meaning to see it and kept meaning to see it and never did. And then a friend of mine was like, "You got to see this movie." And then I looked on Netflix, not for the movie, but it has just arrived on Netflix.
Okay.
So, ready?
Yeah.
Flight.
What?
Flight with Denzel Washington.
Oh, I saw that floating around. Really? Is that good? Isn't it like he's drunk
Holy
or something?
Holy smokes. God almighty, he's so good. He's such a good actor. I mean, we know this, but you can't believe it's so gripping. I mean, not for Mila, of course not, but it is such a good, you know, well-spent 2 hours, whatever it is. It's totally gripping and
really
fascinating and makes you think about all sorts of things. But he and the cast is great and the directing's great. And there's this, you know, all this airplane stuff, which is hugely interesting. And that great actor, I'm spacing his name. Oh, he's so good. Hold on, I gotta look it up. It is so worth your while.
Really?
I mean,
I'm shocked.
Seriously,
I'd seen that movie, and it just occurred to me, I will never watch that movie. But if you say it's good, and I've finished watching Walking Dead,
too.
I've all caught up. I don't, you know, I got nothing else to do now.
Robert Zemeckis directed it.
Oh well, in that case.
And no, but listen. Honestly,
I'm skeptical, but you've never given me a bad. What's it?
Don Cheadle.
You've never given me a bad movie recommendation, so.
No, I think we have the same taste. Don Cheadle's in it. John Goodman, this beautiful woman, Kelly Riley. Holy smokes, is she pretty?
Wow.
And then this other woman and then Denzel Washington, who's just. He's just phenomenal. He should have gotten an Oscar. He was nominated for an Oscar, but he didn't get it. But you know what that's like? It's like a really good slice of pizza or something where every single bite you're like, this is just good. It's just good the whole time. And then you finish the crust and you're like, ah, that was satisfying.
You know, when you say that, all I do is I get hungry for pizza. I don't get motivated to see the movie. But that sounds good.
Also have a Flight. Pizza and watch a movie.
Sold. You know what I'll probably do? I'll probably watch it Sunday afternoon, this Sunday, probably during the Super Bowl, because it's not like I got invited to any parties. So.
See, I don't like that. I don't like, of course you can come over, but I just, not even a party. But you were saying that I wasn't a good wife. Then I thought about a good wife.
I wasn't saying you were not
a
good wife. It's just that you
got
all this pork butt. I got wings. I got all this food. I've been going out getting all craft beer, I guess, for the three kids, right? All that IPA beer for the three kids that you got. Oh, I'm not having friends over. It's just for the kids. All the beer for the kids. You're elementary school kids. But one of
Denise
the kids
Garofalo
is in...
has my bracelet. Myla's my friend, too.
Whatever. I mean, Myla's just like, Dad, I'm making bracelets for anybody who would ever invite you to a Super Bowl party.
She can make one for you in the colors of the Seahawks.
Uh-huh. Well, she's rooting
for
the Denver Broncos.
Who are you voting for?
I'm rooting probably for the Broncos. Just because
there's an unsung hero on the Seahawks, an unsung hero, Russell, what's his name? The quarterback is an unsung hero.
Well, good for him. But, I like the team that beat the Patriots. That way that makes it seem like the Patriots did better.
I'm backing the Seahawks.
Oh yeah.
Because of Sherman.
I'm actually lean that way, too. So I don't know. It'll be a good Super Bowl for me that I'll be watching alone in my house because...
I've got one more thing to talk about. That's fascinating me, and I want to know if you have any inside information.
All right.
The bridge scandal
fascinates me. Never heard of it. You know what you should do, Isabel?
What?
You should get the app for the program. The Majority. Yeah. You go to majorityapp.com.
I have the app.
Okay. Well, why didn't you listen to the program? Because Cliff and I talked about it for 15, 20 minutes.
This morning already?
Yeah.
Oh, God, why wasn't I invited? I'm so interested in that scandal.
Go back. Listen. In 2 hours, the whole thing will be up on your app. You just open up your app, go to podcasts, click on that, on the last one that you see.
Listen to you guys.
Yes, and you can just take your finger and scroll through to about 30 minutes in, and we talk about Chris Christie for about 25 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Or you could have seen me on Chris Hayes last night talk about it.
Or you could have listened to any show for this month.
Or you could have gotten even deeper insights had I been invited to your Super Bowl party. But that's not going to be happening because I'm going to be sitting alone, maybe talking to other people about Chris Christie in my apartment. Talking to myself.
Maybe eating a microwavable pot pie while he watches Flight.
That's right.
And reflects on his life.
That's right. Milo will be sitting next to me doing Rainbow Loom, and I'll be telling her about Chris Christie, and she'll be just like, enough, Dad. Just watch the game, but don't turn the volume.
Oh, I'm obsessed.
No big deal.
I'm obsessed.
That's all right. I'm sure you have plenty of friends coming over, or those kids who are drinking all that beer can tell you all about Chris Christie.
You're punishing me. It's not an attractive side of yourself, Sam. You can just throw me a bone and say, I think he did it.
Oh, I don't think he just did it. I think he did all of it. Oh, yeah, he's done. I will tell you this.
There's this whole thing with real estate, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Listen. I don't want to go back over it again because people have already
heard
it.
All right. I know. Sorry, fans. I know. But it's just that I'm obsessed.
No, you should be. But it's going to be fun. You're going to get a big payoff. You're going to see Chris Christie resign his position. My guess would be it's part of a plea deal. But
to get off from going to jail, and then he'll have to just step down from public office.
Oh yeah. They may make him actually just take tolls at the GW Bridge for a period of time, just as part of the punishment. I don't.
That is the craziest thing. I mean, if you ever look at that George Washington Bridge, how could you mess with the George Washington Bridge? It's like the stupidest thing ever.
Well, that's the least of it, I think. But
it is the least of it, I think, too. I think there's an affair going on. I think there's,
yep.
There's, right?
Yep.
I think so.
That woman, there was a...
Darn it. All right, I'm going to go back and listen. But I wish that I had been in the studio and I could have listened to you guys talk about it.
If only this show did more than just Friday afternoon movie reviews. If only there was some sort of political aspect to this show that you could listen to.
Wow, that's Matt. That's not me.
I know. I didn't even hear it because it garbled out. So thank God, because it had a little mean tint to it in your tone.
Isabel, as usual, always a pleasure.
Ah, the pleasure is mine. It really is.
All right. Let's
Flight, everybody.
Okay. We'll watch Flight, and then we'll all have a good Super Bowl thinking about the wonderful pork butt that you've made for everybody.
Yep. It's going to roast for 7 hours. Just think about that.
You're kidding me. All right. I'll call you later.
Nope. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
All right, folks. Freebie Friday, I guess.
Oh, wow. How did that happen?
I don't know. I'll take a couple of calls. I don't want to go too long today. I've put out way too much material this week. Just too much material.
We put enough out this week to cover us for all of next week.
That blows my mind that
she would have a party
that strongly about Flight. No, it doesn't surprise me. She wouldn't invite you to the party.
Michael, should we tell Sam that we're going there first? We had the invites? Yeah.
Invited us over Twitter, so
it's been pretty,
we'll be there.
I've been impressed with how much Isabel has not invited me over to her place.
She's oddly adversarial with you. It's interesting because you're direct. You're very upfront about it.
She's
but the more
cagey.
I realize there's actually a very passive-aggressive
right.
view to
yes.
to the Gillies-Cedar dynamic.
Yeah, and it's not coming from me.
No, right? You're upfront with everything.
I'm completely transparent. But now she drops this bomb on me that her book was optioned for a movie, and it's gotten so far that they've actually attached an actress to it.
Yeah, great to talk with you, Sam. I'd love to talk about the things that you cover in the show. Just want to kind of make it, you know, just clear that I'm not listening. Yeah. Also, Amy Adams is going to star in a movie off of my book. And I'm creating this unbelievable Super Bowl party, which I guess, again, just sort of implicitly you're not invited to. Watch Flight.
Yeah.
God bless.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this is it. I've got three kids who are drinking all that IPA beer that she was bragging about.
Maybe that's part of bagpipe training.
My butt poops on I.
Oh, come on.
I am Zuss. I'm not kidding.
So
first time listener, and I agree with your take on Christie. Personally, I would like to see criminal charges. We'll see if he lies under oath or not. I don't think he's going to get the opportunity before. I think that when they bring him in, they're going to have already something. What? What are you laughing about?
Fantastic insight from my butt poops.
I think my butt poops is right on this. But my butt poops raises an important point. But I think, you know, it's just, this morning on Morning Joe, like, I think you're completely right. I don't see how, I'm not going to assume he goes to jail. I think it's very possible. But there's no way he's going to run for president. No way he's very, very unlikely he finishes his term. And they're on Morning Joe and they're like, is the lesson here that, if you're Republican, you just cannot trust that the media is always going to give you good coverage. Is that how he needs to toughen up?
That is literally
the conversation there. The conversation they're having is like, you know, John McCain got used to the media giving him really nice treatment, and he was shocked in 2008 when they turned on him. And that's what Chris Christie needs to get used to if he's moving forward. And, of course, they do the caveats, like, you know, I mean, assuming that, you know, he's not a felon.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way for us to know at this point what's gone on there. It is completely, we cannot see. There's no indications of what's going on here. So is it possible that this is just a media thing? Unless, of course, it all turns out that, no, it was all horribly corrupt and the media actually was very slow to get on this.
Oh, right. And that isn't even, of course, is not even.
Well, they don't add that. That's
slight,
the unspoken part of that
course,
conversation.
On the slight off chance that Chris Christie has done what he's pretty much completely obviously done.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. Milton Apathy, as you saw in Chris Hayes, the issue with the with Atlanta traffic has much to do with public policy and race as it did poor planning by the governor. But I believe if you follow the money, there is likely an Alex story here. TSP lost would have expanded transportation options for everybody in the metro Atlanta area. But the Tea Party types blew the racist dog whistle and crushed any hopes for modern city in the South. Also, wherever there is dirty work to be done down here in the South, i.e. anti-gay legislation, school vouchers, the go-to strategy is to run it through the conservative black clergy to scuttle any progressive gains. Follow the money. Dude, you need a regular spot on that show. Well, I mean, they have me on a weekly basis. I had read a piece about, I guess, the building of, if I remember correctly, this is, I don't know, 6 to 8 months ago, I can't remember, on the building of, maybe it was a stadium or something in Atlanta. And there is a real, there has been a very explicit, more explicit than you usually see, sort of attempt to keep certain people out of access to certain areas as they build the transportation system in Atlanta, which is not to say, frankly, that we don't see a lot of that in, we haven't seen a lot of that in just about every city. I mean, that there is always a consciousness about that. But it's, over time, it gets sort of like watered down. But there was something that Hayes had tweeted out, a study about traffic or a book about traffic that I may actually read if I ever get a chance to read again. Anything that's optional. Whiz fan Sammy Cara Santa Maria would be a good guest to have on for GMOs. She's progressive. She knows the science. She comes out in favor of GMOs. Make sure you ask her about golden rice. I really think that we have, you know, covered GMO for the time being, but we'll put her on the list next time we want to have GMOs. But yeah, put her on the list. Cara Santa Maria. Jim Swim. I followed a link from an Excel tweet this morning to learn a quick tip. Guess who has sponsored content on that site? Here's a hint. Rhymes with Rogoff. Unbelievable. What? Excel has sponsored content? Had Reinhardt and Rogoff? What? You have to be a little bit more explicit. Wise Line, Pert. Chris Christie would have to be frog rolled. A squared. Sam, great MR week, including Janine, and then your spot on All In last night. Can't wait to see Christie in an orange jumpsuit. Would recommend, for those who missed it, Cornacki last Sunday, where he had laid out the way Christie has used the Port Authority as a piggy bank to fund New Jersey projects. Rewards his allies and not explode the deficit so he can claim he's fiscally prudent. Agree he's tarnished, but not sure if done. Here's hoping they find recording of the Christie aide who threatened Hoboken mayor. Umars. Personally, one of the most offensive things about your homophobe guest on Tuesday. Oh, jeez.
Forget?
Yeah, I was like, wait a second. On Tuesday, who was on Tuesday? And who did we have on Tuesday? We had the I thought you were talking about the economist.
Alan Manning of the London School of Economics.
Like,
the
economist. There's no reason wages won't hurt job growth.
Austin Ruse, right.
The pots don't fit, incidentally.
was how ridiculous he seemed to think the notion that you, a Jew, would not have a Christmas tree during the holidays. You know, that moment was funny. I guess I would have gotten into it further with him. I mean, at first he was trying to play, you don't know what it is to be a religious person. And I don't know if I consider myself a religious person. We don't go to temple very regularly on Shabbat. We do occasionally. We do make a point of having, you know, dinner together on Friday nights, but we try and do that every night, frankly. And we do say the blessing over the meal. We say one, a Hebrew blessing over the meal, and then we say also one that I guess, I don't know if you call a pagan or a naturalist, one that we picked up when we were upstate about the earth and the moon and the sun.
You sing a Carly Simon song?
And then the third thing we do is, we sing. And, you know, but we go to all the high holidays. Mila goes to Hebrew school. She learned Hebrew. And then, of course, we protest against any Palestinians or Arabs who come into the country for the UN. No, no, we don't do that. But you know, so I'm not religious, but, I'm a reform / reconstructionist Jew, I guess, on some level. And but the one thing that we do is we don't celebrate Christmas because we go to Michigan. Nikki's parents celebrate Christmas. So Mila gets a taste of Christmas, but it is, you know, as secular as Christians think Christmas is. For me, it's not secular because I grew up, we didn't celebrate Christmas. For a couple of years, my parents put up a sock over the mantelpiece so that we would get a present on that day, but that was it. It just didn't even occur to us.
The older you
get. In Worcester,
get,
there was not a lot of Jews who had Christmas trees. In New York, there are.
Isn't the Jewish community in Worcester is obviously relatively small, but it's pretty, like, tight-knit. I have a buddy who's from Worcester, and I spent a little bit of time there, and it seemed like there is a small but very, like, you know, even, like, some Hasids there. Like, there's a real scene, but it's maybe
was
sometimes.
Was that Jeremy?
Yeah.
Jeremy lived two blocks away from me, apparently.
It's crazy.
In the Jew section of town. No, I don't know about that, but it's pretty small knit. I mean 7%, which is bigger than maybe 7%. But maybe now it's down to 5%, which is bigger obviously than the country's population, but not necessarily for the Northeast.
No.
But whatever.
As you get older, Jewish Christmas gets better and better.
Oh.
Chinese food, movie, relax.
Well, the best thing about being a Jew who does not celebrate Christmas, and I get that halfway now because I go to Michigan, but sort of like, you know, when I go back to Worcester for like Passover or Yom Kippur or whatever it is, you know, I get all the responsibilities. I've got to organize it. I got to deal with it. I got to make sure that, you know, when we go to Michigan, Nikki deals with it. The best thing about not celebrating Christmas is you don't have any of the anxiety. This is the most anxious time of the year, as far as I can tell, for Christians. And for me, it used to be like, this is the time where I lock myself in my apartment for 4 days. Nobody's going to call me, and I'm going to build something out of wood. And that was basically what I used to do. Now I got to go, and I just get mildly drunk for 3 days as we go to Michigan. But okay, so
mildly.
Anyways, how ridiculous he seemed to think the notion that you, a Jew, would not have a Christmas tree during the holidays, which reminded me of a personal anecdote regarding the war on Christmas. My 6-year-old broke down one morning before school in December. He said he didn't want to go because the other kids laughed at him for not celebrating Christmas. He said he would never tell anyone again that he was Muslim. We handled things appropriately with his teacher, but would my son be considered a battle win for the O'Reilly side of this war? I mean, look, on some level, I think there's part of that. You know, it's funny, Mila, this is the first year she's not outwardly saying, like, Jewish, Jewish, Jewish. I don't want to be Jewish. I want to be Christian. And I'm like, you know, you realize that if we were Christian, we would send you to Christian school or whatever it is. It's not being Christian isn't just getting presents for Christmas. But Mila doesn't have that much, although, you know, her public school is, you'd imagine it would be more Jewy than it is. But
it would be quite Jewish.
No. They're pretty good about sort of, you know, celebrating all different holidays. She's never come back with that. For her, it was like, I don't tell people I'm a Red Sox fan.
The mayor's a Red Sox fan. Does she
well,
know that?
Now, yeah, it's different. But
De Blasio's New York.
You know, I think at 6 years old, in particular, it's very difficult for kids to feel like they're different in any way from the other kids. And
tell me about it.
And Well, now, Michael, fortunately, you didn't have to. You didn't
I
go to school.
Sports.
No, you didn't. Not really. Come on. Not at age six.
Oh, well, at age six, I guess I didn't have a concept.
But, I mean, you probably aged emotionally later, so it might have felt when you were
when I was 14 and playing, absolutely. I would need to be escorted
your
holding
emotional
my mom's
development
hand
was,
out to the basketball
was
court
slow
as an example. No, I mean, I barely can handle
this. Yeah,
but
you know what? But you know what? Playing.
When Michael got fouled, he would just sit there and cry until mommy came out and give a kiss on a boo-boo, right? On the foul on a basketball court when you were like 14.
I would dispute the use of the phrase boo-boo.
Right.
Let me score like daddy lets me.
I just think it's 6 years old.
I grew up in a very hostile household.
At 6 years old, I think it's tough. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't know that it is a function of them celebrating Christmas at school as much as it is kids coming in talking about Christmas. But certainly I remember as a kid, like, feeling a little bit awkward about, like, fortunately they sang O Tannenbaum in German, so nobody knew what we were singing. But when there was, like, an explicit sort of Christmas thing, I did feel a little bit like...
I know you don't have Milo watch a lot of television, but with me, I would think like, well, I was raised Catholic, so I celebrated Christmas, but I would see the commercials and be like, man, if you're not celebrating Christmas, then you're just getting bombarded with it. Like,
she doesn't watch commercials that much because everything she watches on Netflix or on YouTube, she doesn't see those commercials that much. But there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that, but not much anymore. And I think she's sort of grown out of it.
I think besides, obviously, the history is one thing, and I understand all the problems with Thanksgiving. That said, it seems to me, how could that not be the best holiday?
Thanksgiving?
Yeah, you eat some great food. You watch The Godfather all day on whatever network replays those movies.
Yeah, six-year-olds don't like The Godfather. Shank Steele.
What did you say?
Six-year-olds don't do that. Where is Waldo? I just don't see it. Ask a libertarian. They will tell you. Sam Cedar is hot. You know, I'll tell you this. Until yesterday afternoon after the show, I had no idea who Waldo was.
I had to show Sam a picture of who Waldo
was.
Because
I thought Waldo was a walrus. And I'm like, do I really need to lose that much
weight? He had the same familiarity with the children's book that he does with Jason Biber.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was astounding.
Eric, 22. Yeah. Your daughter should do a sale for charity in John Benjamin's voice, The Majority Report. The DX Fool. You know, Sam, if Bill Press's wife could sell her scarves over his show and brag about which Congress members wear them, why can't Mila do the same thing on your show? Brag about who wears them. Maybe get her on Brittany Maxwell's YouTube show. Who's Brittany Maxwell? Will you write that down? Speaking of recommendations, check out Bob's Gifts on Tumblr, the best way to watch John Benjamin on mute. Frieden College. From yesterday, Michael, do you have any thoughts about Macklemore's alleged 9/11 trutherism? We got to do it tomorrow. Sorry. His tweet from 2009, as he was benign, as he was just quoting the Immortal Technique dope MC. By the way, however, a song in 2005 called Bush Song has some damning lyrics. He doesn't really change my own view on Macklemore's. Still Team Kendrick. Ronald Reagan.
Definitely.
Sam, breaking news drop yesterday when Janine was talking about the Roman Empire would have been an all-time great Majority Report moment. Too bad. Regarding,
you're hurting Sam there because he was just focused on that whole time.
I know. Regarding parts not fitting, this is a legitimate concern for any potential couple, whether hetero or homosexual. If parts fitting is a marriage prerequisite, then I guess everyone should engage in premarital sex. It's a good point. Kevman, any thoughts on Howard Dean coming out against President Obama's diplomatic thaw with Iran?
Okay, so Howard Dean,
I was not even aware of this.
This enrages me.
Is he a lobbyist for like the MEK or something?
He's a lobbyist for a group called the MEK. And the MEK is this cult organization that was part of the original Iranian Revolution. There's a lot of history.
How do you do these things?
They split from the government, obviously. They're based politically in Europe. They had a camp in Iraq. They actually fought on behalf of Saddam Hussein against Iran in the 1980s. They've committed numerous acts of human rights abuses, including on many of their own members. They're a hybrid of like a cult and a guerrilla organization, and they have plenty of people lobbying for them, including Howard Dean. And that's where his Iran stuff comes from. What?
Is Lanny Davis one of those guys too?
I actually think this is the one thing that Lanny Davis might have missed. But I mean, Howard Dean, I think Victoria Clark, I mean, any kind of like mid-level to upper-level DC person you could think of who's just sort of like floating around has probably been paid to get them to take off of the terrorism list. They've been on the terrorism list.
So depressing to me.
Howard Dean, the best you could say about him on stuff like Iran is he has no idea what he's talking about. And, you know, it's appalling and pathetic. That's my thought on it. Yes, he lobbies for MEK.
But it's just like, you know, like at what point do you go like, oh, do I really got to go out? Like at the very least, you know, when you get paid for these things, take the money on a weekly basis. So that's like, you know, it's not like we're going to give you whatever the money is as a retainer. So that 6 months into your contract, you'd be like, oh, wait a second. I got to come out against this thing to stop a war with Iran because I took 70 grand, 200 grand, whatever, 500 grand. I mean, I don't know how much they pay Howard Dean.
I don't even know if he's still currently on contract. I mean, he could just be, you know, freelancing from it. But, I mean, the stuff he did say when he was on contract was astonishing. And, you know, this is the type of group that it's like when they tried to co-opt the Green Movement people were like, oh, please, could you stay out of this and not ruin what we're trying to do? I mean, it is a universally despised group.
That's really too bad. Fluid Balance, Sam Bravo, for being just about the only comedian with enough class to poke fun at Chris Christie without picking up the lowest of the low-hanging fruit, fat jokes, which always makes me wince a little bit since the overweight and obese and often survivors of sexual abuse, poor or both. Thanks for all the great laughs. I mean, I think at times we have come up against that at different times, but look, the guy's a douchebag, and I'm not interested in him. I mean, I think to the extent that we have talked about his weight, we've talked about it in the context of, you know, whether or not that is a liability as a candidate. And I think, you know, maybe in the context of I need a limo to drive me over to a helicopter type of situation when
Hedges actually talked about that, which surprised me.
Yeah. I'm not as interested in it because I just think the guy's a douchebag, and I'm so happy to see him get his comeuppance. Nathan Flowers, maybe he'll lose some weight. Prison could be good for him. Follows up on the Christie thing. It could save his life. Win-win. Won't be seeing Flight. Denzel Washington, no thank you. Have you seen Contiki yet? It's on Netflix. I have not. I'll write it down. I got a whole list. I got like a bunch of like papers like this all around my house with names of movies. I'm like, what is this? What does these two words refer to? And I Google it to find out. Oh, it's a movie. Somebody must have. PF 1800. The first hour of Flight is great. After that, it's just an alcoholic being an alcoholic. Thank you for ruining that movie for me. B. You also apparently like pork. Yes, I do not keep kosher. Bayonnaise. Although as a kid, I don't think I ever had ham. We had bacon, but we just never had ham. I think it was just sort of like, I don't think my dad ever got served ham as a kid. Just never had ham.
I don't do pork.
And the only time I ever had ham, I think in the only time in my life that I've ever eaten ham was one time. I've told the story on this program. I'm not going to go into it, but I went down to visit my Irish Catholic girlfriend's family in the Cape as a high school.
Better eat some ham there.
A high school. And, like, I came down there, and her father had just, like, supposedly announced to a room full of his friends who were over for, like, a cocktail party, like, I don't know, like, three other couples in their 60s, that he had read her high school yearbook and had determined that I had had sex with his daughter. And I was like, and his mom, her mom just jumped in and said, no comment, Sam, right? And ushered me into the kitchen, sat me down. I don't know where my girlfriend was at the time. She'd come back from, sat me down with a plate of ham. I ate that plate of ham that night, got so drunk, I vomited all over their sheets. It was just a horrible story.
You sound like a great high school boyfriend.
Oh, yeah, no, it was great. Bayonets.
Let's make clear in the yearbook that we have engaged in intercourse. And I'll throw up on your parents' sheets later.
Bayonets. I mean, Austin Ruse did have a point about the Christmas tree. Doesn't make Mila feel left out at Sunday school? Sammy Cameron 1. Michael probably won't get the reference. But when he asked if you could sing Carly Simon before meals, I heard anticipation while pouring ketchup. Bush and Chains. Yeah, they didn't get it. I am not, Sam Cedar, I am not religious, but I pray to a fake deity and make my spawn learning useless, outdated language. Give me a break. Well, we're not praying. It's a blessing.
Hebrew is a useless, outdated language?
Well, it may be.
I mean, they do still, they speak Hebrew in Israel as an example, right?
Right. But it's not praying to a fake deity. It's basically saying a blessing over the food. Like, thank you for this food. And she says it to a the concept of God that we're talking about with her is not...
So this is a fake... Okay, I see.
Bush and Chains. SNL fixed their race problem by quickly getting a token black woman on the show. No shortage of another ethnic minority. How's Majority FM doing? We're working on it. The International Herald. I mean, it is actually, you know, to be honest with you, it is, it is something we talk about on a daily basis. And I don't have the resources to go out and do a search. I can tell you out of the literally 100 plus responses I got on Craigslist when I was searching around for who I think ultimately led Matt, right? Wasn't it you? You came from Craigslist, right?
I did. I come from Craigslist.
That I don't think, I think we had one or two, like literally 100 plus, one or two maybe African-American applicants. I wanted a woman. I interviewed every woman who applied. I couldn't interview every guy who applied. And it's quite possible that some of those applicants might not have been, you know, like I was specifically looking for African-American applicants you know, just to get, because I have a limited perspective, and I did interview every single one of the women, and almost like they had no idea what, I mean, the women who, and there wasn't that many, like most of them were conservative. And I almost hired one woman who was conservative. I just thought like, but she was like full on movement conservative. And I just thought it would be too much. I mean, I thought maybe, you know, we'd have some banter, but after a while it would get
disgusting.
Yeah. And then, you know, I had other people who were just like, you work out of what? I mean, there was one Southern woman who was like, did you not even like Google the show? Like that was, I was just like,
I'm calling about the majority. Y'all don't celebrate Christmas?
Bush
you
and Chains
ham
said,
after you defiled a man's daughter in his home? That doesn't sound right to me.
Bush and Chains says, don't you dare hire a Republican.
I was hired to fulfill a much-needed Jewish quotient on the show.
Yeah, that's right. International Harold, back from Mexico watching yesterday's podcast. Either Janine has shrunk or that's the biggest can of Red Bull I've ever seen.
It was the massive.
Nick, I would also recommend Cara Santa Maria as a guest because she was outspoken against labeling as frequently on HuffPo and TYT. She argued a pro-science point of view but totally ignored the horrible consequences of GMOs on agriculture, economies, and ecology. I'd love to hear a challenge on this. RC Press. Looks like the State Department will release a friendly EIS. I heard about this on the Keystone XL. Looks like all the above will push our climate catastrophe over the edge. This is going to be a big fight. This is going to be a big fight because a lot of people have committed, pledged to for civil disobedience, tens of thousands, I believe, based upon this report. And this report is going to come out and claim certain things that the EPA won't even claim. It's going to be interesting to see what John Kerry does about this. It's pretty amazing. DR, Josh Orton. Oh, final I Am of the Week. Josh Orton said Christy hopes prison stripes are slimming. That's just funny. Please never lose that comic gold in your show. You know, I do think, like, I think you can overdo it with Christy, but I think...
You can also underdo it.
You can also underdo it. You know, I don't know what that means.
I meant that joke did happen to be funny. That Josh Orton joke was a funny joke, and to completely exclude it as a possibility, I wouldn't 100%.
Ian Longstog will be the final item of the week. Michael Southern Woman may be his best yet, other than Right Wing Mandela, of course. Literally laughed at my cubicle. So basically, he thinks the cubicle funnier than you. See you guys on Monday. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out of gear.